From team headquarters, this is the 49ers Studios Podcast. Welcome in, everybody, to the debut of the 49ers Studios Podcast. I'm Joe Fan, joined by a guest who you got to start it big when you're going debut of a new podcast, and that's 49ers General Manager John Lynch. John, thanks so much, as always, for your time.
Well, thank you, and I got to be honest, I did not know this was your debut. I'm honored to be the first.
And we got to start with your team. We're through training camp and two preseason games, and so where are things right now, maybe compared to where you hoped they'd be?
Yeah, you know, Joe, one of the things I've learned being in this business for a long time, a lot has been made about the fact that I'm new in my role as a general manager, but I have been around this business for a long time. And, you know, that old adage that it's never as good as it seems, and I knew that when everybody felt really good during the off season, and when we beat a very good Kansas City team in a preseason game. And I know the same after it didn't look pretty at all versus Denver, that it's not that bad. And so it's somewhere in between. We've said all along that we're pleased with the direction we're going in, but we understand we have a ways to go. And what we do like is the way our team's competing. What we have to eliminate to see just how good we are, Bill Belichick has a great way of saying it. In order to win, you have to first keep from losing. Well, the other night, we self-inflicted wounds never gave us a chance. Turnovers, penalties, those things don't give you a chance to really evaluate how good you are. I'm looking forward to Minnesota, where we can go play a little cleaner and another good team. I think a lot of people are anticipating them to be a playoff team, to really get a true measuring stick. And we all know that this third preseason game, a little more accurate representation of what you're going to be as a team, because teams treat it more like a regular season game, at least for the first half.
And, I mean, we're at, I think, the seven month mark now from when Jed York and the 49ers shocked the world, came out of nowhere, John Lynch, the 49ers' new GM. And so we've really enjoyed getting to know John Lynch, the general manager. But here in San Francisco, we don't necessarily know John Lynch, the future, not if, but when, Hall of Famer. I mean, 15 seasons, 9 Pro Bowls, 2 All-Pros, 26 career picks, 13 sacks, and nearly 1,400 tackles. I mean, those are numbers that will see your name in Canton for the rest of your life. And when you think about that honor, and like I said, it's a win, not an if type thing, what does it mean to you? But when you hear that, John Lynch, Pro Football Hall of Fame, what resonates with you about that?
What resonates is I'm glad you're so confident, Joe. I've been there for the last 4 years as a finalist. No, I am, you know, history says that people that have gone as far as I have, and it seems like every year you take the next step. You know, I moved into the top 15, then you moved to the top 10, and so it's certainly trending in the right direction. It is something unlike anything else I've ever done in football, in that you have zero control. The control I had, my resume was built long ago, and I'm very proud of that. I am humbled each year that my name's in the same mentions as the guys that are in that finalist room, even the guys that are in the 25, you know, the semifinalist, or even the guys, the nominees. I mean, every time, that's a humbling experience. So someday I do hope it happens. I can tell you then that it won't have been the greatest day of my life as an NFL football player. That's winning Super Bowls. Those are the moment I was named a captain, because those are the reasons you play. I do think it will be special to be in there with the greats of the game. You know, many 49ers that I admired, Ronnie Lott and Joe Montana and Steve Young and Jerry Rice. That will be special. But there's other things, winning Super Bowls and things like that, that I think that's why you play, and you play for the love of the game. And I know I loved it for 15 years.
Every person in their life has a few decisions that are so pivotal and really change the course of where their life is headed. And I would imagine one for you is the decision to play baseball or football. And is it wild when I read off that resume that, again, I wasn't with you when you made the decision, but was there do you ever look back, man, this almost never came to be?
Yeah, and, you know, I think you're speaking of – are you talking about this job or my baseball, football career?
Yeah, between baseball, football career.
There were a lot of people who at the time, you know, I went to Stanford as a quarterback, so I had barely played safety. My senior year was really good. But a lot of people, I had already signed with the Marlins in their first class. I was their second pick. I had a first, my first results as I was out in short season A ball were good. Numbers, you know, I was 1-3, but my ERA was very good. I was getting better. And people saw a clear path to the major leagues. And so a lot of people, including people very close to me, are like, dude, what are you thinking? You are this far from the big leagues. And, you know, you've barely played in football. It did help when someone like Bill Walsh came and said, look, I think you can be a Pro Bowl football player. And that helped that confidence. But then, you know, I go and play for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, which we were at the bottom of the barrel. We were a terrible franchise at the time, more commonly referred to as the Yucks. And I didn't get on the field right away. I was kind of stuck in the middle of you know, the head coach wanted me to play. The defensive coordinator felt like there were other people that were better. So I had to bide my time. It wasn't until my really at the end of my second year, into my third year, where I became a full-time starter. And so then, believe me, there were times where I was thinking, what did I do? I've tried to follow my heart for the game I loved the most. But I did leave a very promising career. Mind you, the Marlins were getting good. I think it was 95 or 96 they won a World Series. So I'm going, I'm not starting on the worst team in football. And I left something that was very good. And, you know, I may follow my heart, but maybe I'm not too smart. But I'm sure glad I did. It all worked out for a reason.
Going through training camp, and I know you have plenty of training camp memories through your career, and what I love talking to rookies each year about is what their welcome to the NFL moment is. Yeah. when they either step on the field or something happens where it's like, okay, here we go. Do you have that welcome to the NFL moment from whether it was your rookie year, yeah, your second year?
I've got a number of them. You know, the first one that I vividly remember in a mini camp, you know, so I'm drafted, and the old school, you used to go get drafted, and the next weekend you were in a mini camp, and so the whole team was there, and the plan in Tampa to get me on the field right away was to put me kind of in a nickel linebacker role, like we see a lot of guys now playing. And so I was a safety, but they thought I had the ability to cover tight ends and running backs. So Floyd Peters, who was my defensive coordinator, good player in the league, well-known defensive coordinator, kind of crusty old guy, he said, rookie, you know, number 47, every time number 40 comes up, you cover him in one-on-one. And well, number 40 was this guy, Gary Anderson. And Gary Anderson had played in the USFL, I think, for Birmingham, but then played for the San Diego Chargers. And he's a guy, if you follow football back in the day, he was a guy that was just so athletic and acrobatic, kind of one of the early third down backs. But he was a guy that went into the end zone and this famous highlight where he did a flip and landed on his feet. Long before the guy who did it a couple years for the Bengals. And so I was at that game and I had watched him, and I kind of was starstruck by Gary Anderson, and here I was covering him, and every time he came up I had to cover him. Mind you, he was one of the toughest covers in the NFL. And so I did well my very first time, and then I took my lumps. But those are the type of things that form you, and you're either going to break you, or you can say, all right, I got to step up to the challenge, and I did my best. But those are some of them. I think early in my career, when you're facing Barry Sanders, we were in the same division, and you'd face him a couple times a year. That could break your will, because, you know, I was always the free hitter, which is a great thing unless you're facing Barry Sanders, because you're responsible for tackling him. And so we had great battles. There were a lot of welcome to the NFL moments.
When you're in training camp and you think about training camp, and now you're on this side of it as a general manager, when you look back, what are some of your fondest memories? I'd love a story or two from whether it John Gruden and whatever he planned, yeah, throughout camp, or some of the roommates you had, hard practices, how you got through the grind. I mean, yeah, when you look back on your training camp memories.
Yeah. I don't want to be an old curmudgeon and talk about how hard it used to be, but it was hard back then. We had two and a half hour practices a day in Tampa heat, you know, and we didn't leave Tampa. It was right there, and it was brutal. And then we'd have a third walkthrough. And so it was just basically wake up and say, I remember every day saying, dear Lord, if you just get me through today, I promise I'll be a good boy. You know, I won't ever do this. Each and every day you'd do that. And I remember we had a funny guy on our team, Kenny Gant, had come from the Cowboys, and every day just as kind of a joke to the weather, because it was what our strength coach would say, Kenny Gant, can I get a weather report? And he'd hold up his finger like he was reading the wind or whatever, and he'd say, it's going to be a hot one every day, and it's going to be a hot one. And that's just what it was. And so I think that helped form just like the mental toughness. You know, these days it's all relative. So these guys have to form that same mental toughness. And, you know, those are some of my memories, just how hard it was as a GM now. You know, my mindset is just, you know, you got a 90-man roster and you're trying to play every scenario on how are we going to be the best team? What do we need to do to improve ourselves? Where can we help ourselves? The one thing I have found, when everybody's at a 90-man roster, there's not many, you know, special players out there. They're all in camp. Now, as things start to materialize here closer to the 53, there's going to be a lot of good football players. And so what we have to do is constantly study the rest of the league. And I'm really proud of the staff we've put together, led by Adam Peters and Martin Mayhew and Rand Carthon and their guys that are doing a great job of that. We're compiling lists. We're going to be ready when that time comes, such that if we feel like we can improve ourselves, we're going to do everything possible.
And
to
no
do
doubt
so.
Some excruciating decisions
before
you get there.
Yeah, that's you know, it hasn't been many days throughout camp where I haven't had to sit a young man in here who this is his dream. And those aren't easy conversations. Sometimes they know it. But I think even then it's a little emotional for them. And that's not easy, because I know how much they've invested in this game and how important it is and how it's their dream. But you got to do, when I took this job, John Elway, Bill Belichick, Tony Dungy, they all pretty much had the same message. If every decision you make, you ask yourself, is this in the best interest of the San Francisco 49ers? And you can answer yes, then you've made a good decision. So I think if you do that and then you just talk to people honestly, they appreciate it, and you can look yourself in the mirror each and every day.
Yeah, I mean, you watch Hard Knocks. I know the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are on this season, and you, every season, and even working in the business, there's nothing like watching that conversation happen and the tact that you have to use when delivering that news. Going back to, I want to go to 96. You had a fake punt, a 40-yard run on fourth and two. Take me through that play, and I want to know why, if you got that, you got to the 20, what happened? Why didn't you get into the end zone?
Yeah. Well, there's a guy named Joey Galloway who was, frankly, a better athlete than me, and he tackled me, and I still get heat from the guys on that team because it was he and I one-on-one. I tried to shake him, and I didn't. But I can say, not many people can say, I've got a 40-yard average per carry in the NFL. Now,
it's
I only
bad.
Had one carry, but it was for 40 yards. So anytime a running back pops off, I said, what's your yards per carry average?
And so you were the up man? I mean –
yeah,
at that point, you
direct
got,
snap, and it was an audible. I called it, and hey,
call your own number.
There we go.
Why'd you only do it once? That's my question. You didn't want to hurt the average.
I kept asking for it, and they never gave it to me again. And then sooner or later, you start playing, and they kick you off special teams.
26 career picks, though. I mean, no pick sixes. Did we get close? Were there any that
got
tackled at the goal line? Bad times from the teammates for you not finding the end zone?
Oh, yeah. That's a common one, and I have no idea how I played 15 years. That's the one thing I'm miffed at, because sometimes you watch people just fall into them. And there's literally – I scored twice that were called back. You know, you think of those. Another one, I was out at like the half inch, you know. Like, you know, it's just – For some reason, it wasn't meant to be.
what would have been the touchdown celebration had you gotten in?
I wouldn't have known what to do. So maybe it was a good thing.
I think it's interesting in the NFL, someone who's been in the league for as long as you have through different generations of the game, rivalries in the NFL, much more team-centric than individual-centric, right? You don't have that LeBron versus Kevin Durant because people want to hype up Tom Brady versus Peyton Manning, but they don't even step on the field at the same time. And so I'm curious your take on rivalries when you were playing. Did you have a team that, whether it was during your tenure with the Bucks or the Broncos, that you were always ready to go? I mean, it was just that you felt that. I mean, I know everyone tries to downplay during the week, just another week, but you knew this wasn't just another week.
Well, I think the big thing in this league, and I think the league's done a great job of developing these, is that they're your division opponents. So early, we were in the old black and blue. It was the NFC Central. And early on, I told you we weren't very good, but we got pretty good in around 96 when Tony Dungy came around. We got going pretty well. And we competed hard against – that's right when Brett Favre was cutting his teeth, I think 92, 93. And by 96, he was in his first Super Bowl. Well, we start becoming a team – that's to be reckoned with about then. And so those were always great battles. And my goodness, we had, you know, Brett Favre and Warren Sapp talking trash. And it was just, that was one that, you know, Fox would send John Madden and Pat Summerall because they knew it was going to be an old school black and blue. We didn't score many points, but we held the Packers and Brett Favre. They didn't score much versus us. And Reggie White was on those fields. So those were special. Later on in my career, the Rams became a great rivalry for us. Now, those were a little more high-scoring affairs, but we kept the greatest show on turf in the 99 championship. Everybody has kind of the one that got away. That was our one that got away. We held them intact. I mean, that was one of the greatest offenses this league's ever seen. Kurt Warner, Torrey Holt, Isaac Bruce, Oz Hakeem, Marshall Faulk. It just went on and on, and this guy named Kurt Warner came in and led them. And they were lighting up everybody, set scoring records. And we had them at the end of that game with 6 points. And we're just telling our offense, just punt. And they turned it over, and we got beat. But with Ricky Prohl in the corner of the end zone, I think even later, Bob Lang sitting in this room, and he was in Philly, and that became a great rivalry. They had the upper hand early. Later on, we flipped it. We beat them in the 2002 championship game to go to the Super Bowl. But those became very good rivalries. And I think, you know, some of my fondest memories, like walking off the field in Green Bay, and we all know that's a special place. Maybe we don't all know it, but I think everyone should go who loves football, should go watch a game in Lambeau Field. I'll never forget when we were an up-and-coming team. We had played the Packers in the playoffs, and I believe in 97, and we were really coming, and everybody could sense it. And we got down early, but then we made a run at the Packers. We walk off that field, and the folks in Lambeau Field are giving the visiting team a standing ovation because they appreciated good football. And so those are some of the fondest memories I have of my playing career, the great rivalries that this league provides.
Individual? Anything? I mean, were quarterbacks you enjoyed chirping at, or receivers like
Favre
going
was one
with?
For sure, and it wasn't a whole lot of chirping, but just a mutual respect. And I, you know, that guy was a great example because every time you get stressed out, and I was an intense player, and you get stressed out, you get keyed up, you just watch the joy that guy would. We'd be in the middle of a game that was 7-6 in the fourth quarter, and he'd be in their huddle doing the YMCA, leading the crowd, you know, and laughing and cutting up. So he was a great example. Let's not forget, this is still a game. It should be fun. Marshall Faulk and I, Marshall went to San Diego State, so he and I worked out a lot together. But when we played, we didn't really like each other. When we played against each other, and then we were friends after. But that's the most I ever talked was against the Rams, because they had guys that were chirpy, and we really held them in check. So Marshall and I still give each other a hard talk, because I wasn't really a trash talker, nor was he. But we kind of brought that out of each other. Barry Sanders was a guy that I just had, you know, I think one of the greatest honors I've ever had in this league is, you know, I'm sitting back during my career, and one day I'm going through my mail, and I see something from Barry Sanders and the Detroit Lions. And, you know, he invited me to his Hall of Fame speech as part of his entourage, as part of his group. You know, you're allowed so many tickets. And he wrote me a handwritten note that just said, "I always appreciated the way you played. I thought you competed to the highest level. I'd like you to be there." And I'll never forget that. A guy like that. And I always thought he got the best of me, and thought maybe he didn't think much of me. And for a guy like that to reach out, that, you know, those are the coolest honors that you have in this league.
Do you still have that?
I still have that letter. Yeah, I do at home.
I think it's, as we've gotten to know you, we've talked to different people who know you to get that perspective. And I mean, everyone just really has such great things to say about you. But I would like to imagine on the football field, there were some people that really weren't fond of you. I mean, just went back and watched some of your highlight tape this morning, and to say you're an intense player seems like an understatement. I mean, did you take pride in, did you want to be feared? I mean, what was your mindset as this hard-hitting safety that patrols the secondary?
Yeah. I think it at times it sounds self-serving that I use all these examples of great 49ers, but that those were my formative years here at Stanford. And it just so happened that when I became a safety in my second year of being a safety, Bill Walsh was our coach, and Ronnie Lott was up at our practices a lot because of Bill, but because Tom Homo, who was his backup for years here, who Ronnie has great respect for, he was our secondary coach. So Ronnie would be there. And that's one of the things he saw early on. He'd come talk to me and he'd say, "Hey, you're new, but you got a skill." And the game has changed. Now these are like bad words, but then it was, "Hey, you've got something going for you in that before the game ever starts, people are going to be looking for you. And you've won half the battle when you can do that. So your job is to let people know that nothing is free. When they come in your zone, it's going to hurt." And that's not saying you're trying to hurt someone. That's trying to say you're going to make it hurt. And that's just the way we talked. It wasn't cheap. That's the way you played. One thing I'm proud of is I don't think players would tell you. I know, in fact, that players wouldn't tell you that, just like Ronnie, that he wasn't a cheap player. He was a player that people respected, and that's one thing I was always proud of. I didn't push the limit in terms of playing cheap. I played awful physical, but that's how the game was played then. It still is, and that's every time people think the game has changed. Yes, they're emphasizing some rules, and that's smart. We know new things, but the game was fun then because that was part of it. You let people know they come in your area that it was going to be uncomfortable.
John, I can't let you go. Here on the debut of the 49ers Studios podcast, exciting to have you as we're getting to know John Lynch, the future Hall of Fame safety. You said that won't be the best moment in your career because that was the Super Bowl you won in Tampa. You know, like you said, going from the ground up against the Raiders. But I'm curious, what won the emotions of that? But yeah. Did you guys feel like a dominant team? You go back, the Niners game, the Eagles game, and then the Super Bowl against the Raiders, none of those games were particularly close. I mean, did you walk on the field knowing that we have a chance to run away with this thing?
Yeah, I would say Philly was really our nemesis then, and we had to go to Philly. We didn't have a break. So after we beat Philly, we didn't have the week off, the traditional week off, and then play it 2 weeks later. It was go time. But I can tell you, when I saw Rondé Barber pick that ball against Philly, I knew we had just won the Super Bowl, not only the NFC Championship, because we were going so good as a team. We were hot. Philly was that team. We kept knocking our head against the wall. We couldn't figure out. John Gruden, I think, helped us as a team. It was interesting. Tony Dungy built that team, but John Gruden kind of took us over the hump because we were able to produce some offense against Philly. And, you know, the Raiders were the number one offense, but we did not fear them at all. We kind of thought, you know, this is our game. And sure enough, it was. And that wasn't that we didn't respect them. But once we beat Philly, we kind of knew that game. And every player on the team would tell you that. And maybe it's easy to, you know, revisionist history. If we had lost, would everyone say that? I think the answer would be yes, because we all knew that game was ours.
There's this iconic, I mean, you search John Lynch images, and the first one that comes up is you with the Lombardi Trophy,
yeah,
hands in the air. Can you summarize what went into that picture? I mean, that.
Yeah. It's just everything you play for if you've got the right mindset in this league. You know, it pains me that not everybody in this league gets to experience it, but that's also what makes it special. But when you see truly great players like a Dan Marino, Warren Moon, and you know, these guys haven't experienced it, Barry Sanders, you feel for them because it is, it's almost cliche, but people say they can never take it this away from us. The NFL is so fluid these days, then not so much, but it's so fluid. The roster's new every year, but that group, that particular group, they can never. We had a 10-year reunion not long ago, and it was like everyone showed up, and typically those things are hit or miss, 50%. No one didn't show up because that's what, when you have that and when you did that as a team, it sticks with you and it will stay with you. It's etched in history. We're on that Lombardi Trophy, and that's what the motivation is here. Look, we're a long way from it, but that's why Kyle and I came here. That's the expectations we're trying to set. And, you know, I know that's to a lot of people. They say, "Hey, you know, hey, dude, you got a long way to go." Well, we know that, but if you're not shooting for that, that's one thing we want to be very clear, though, is that we came in here to win championships and to create a standard and an organization that gives you a chance every year. And if you aren't doing that, I don't think you should be in the business.
John. I can't think of a better way to conclude. That was perfectly said. Thank you so much for the time. Again, been a pleasure to get to know you, and looking forward to watching your team play this season.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. Appreciate it.
All right, this has been the debut of the 49ers Studios podcast. We'll be back soon. Thanks again to John Lynch. Until then, I'm Joe Fan. We'll talk to you soon.